Hello, it's Laura Rawlings. Welcome to the Radio Academy podcast. Have you clocked the Radio Academy's monthly meetups in London? They're part of a new series called Last Mondays, and it's an opportunity to get to know other people in the podcast and radio industry, enjoy a few drinks, and hear from some inspirational guest speakers. The events are free if you're a Radio Academy member, so go and take a look at the website and find out all the details about upcoming Last Mondays. In today's podcast, we're sharing some of the highlights from February's gathering. Rosie Wright has recently taken on presenting the Times Radio Early Breakfast Show, and we received lots of positive feedback after Rosie's talk. And one of the things that the audience really valued was the insight that she shared about how she's built her career. So we'll focus on that. How did it all begin?
There was no other alternative, really. It was going to be talking to interesting people, but I didn't really know what sphere that would take, so whether that would be radio or TV or something totally different. Mm-hmm. So I was very lucky in that I really had a one-track mind that this is what I was going to do. So went to university and did pretty much most of my time was spent at the student radio station, which was Surge at Southampton, which I totally loved. I then did a broadcast journalism master's at City because that media law qualification, I just felt like I'm going to need that if I want to do the kind of broadcasting I want to.
So often the going to uni bit is one of the first points at which people are making a decision, weighing up what they should do. You didn't study broadcasting as your BA or your undergrad, did you? You did something totally different.
The advice I had, and I know everyone's got really different routes into the industry, was you don't need to do a media qualification, just get loads of experience and contacts, and that will stand you in the best position. So I did loads of student radio. I did a local community radio show called Voice FM. I did the Drive show and played a lot of Shania Twain, just getting as much experience as possible behind the microphone so that when I then wanted to do other experience, you've already got that kind of really, even if it's small, but baseline of contacts. The very first piece of work experience I did was working for LBC Radio, picking up the phone, you know, when people are calling in and they want to come on the radio and you're choosing the callers. And it was pretty tough. I'd do night shifts that were kind of from 10 p.m. till 4:30 in the morning, get the bus home and then go to university the next day. But it was the most incredible training ground into what actually makes entertaining, engaging speech radio, which is tough, especially at kind of 2 o'clock in the morning, to find engaging people who tell a story who aren't just ringing because, you know, they might be lonely or have got multiple other things going on.
Or they've had a drink.
Or maybe, yes.
Or these other things, yes, that keep people up
or
at night.
Or pranking you. Those people who've sort of had a few drinks and think it's hilarious because they're all up at night, that they'll prank a radio station. So you're trying to weed out who's serious, who's legitimate, who's actually going to contribute to this conversation rather than embarrass you.
So whose show was that then?
I did a whole variety over the time, and actually the presenters that I worked with then, so Stig Abel now presents The Breakfast Show on Times Radio. I used to do the phones on his programme. When I worked at GB News, you know, I'd pick up the phones for Nigel Farage or Andrew Pearce, and these are the people that, you know, 7 years ago actually, I was fielding the calls for their shows. So everywhere you work, when you're the assistant producer and you feel invisible and that no one's looking at you, you are creating the most fantastic contacts database, because those people are the ones who later on, they may very well be, you know, sharing a studio with you.
And you mentioned that at that time you were learning what makes really good, compelling radio, what makes people want to pick up the phone and call. So what do you think makes that kind of radio?
So LBC would be really driven by a very specific question because they're trying to engineer debate. And I noticed there's very different radio for kind of relaxing listen, where you're just going to absorb and be entertained, for another one, which is the head-to-head, putting people together, getting the phone to ring. And they required very different skills. And often, and it's quite difficult, I think, when you're producing radio to work out where the line is for that. To make the phone ring, you've got to ask the really, really punchy, controversial questions. So if you're prepared to do that, the phone rings, but are you going to get the most kind of nuanced conversation out of the people who are really angry ringing up? So it's a real fine balance. Often it's just the emotional, the personal, the emotive stories that make you actually stop and listen. I was a terrible freelancer. I panicked. I worked for whoever would accept me. So I did some TV producing at ITV This Morning.
How did you make this happen? Because how are you even just getting that foot in the door? What are you doing behind the scenes?
So LBC was work experience. And while I was there, I said, I'm just prepared to do anything. One girl who was answering the phones was ill. So I sat next to her and I was like, teach me. And the next day she didn't turn up. So they rang me and said, well, you can come and do it. And that was a paid shift. And so often the relationships I've had or the work experience I've generated was because you were reliable, you said yes, and someone met you fairly recently who knew those things, and you'd be the type of person who would say, I'll do it and I'll get up at a crazy time. So actually, the job I've got now is the first job I've ever got by going through a formal interview process. Every other one was via a relationship, polite pestering, and then being available when they say, can you do this tomorrow? And you just say, yes.
They have a rota crisis and you're the answer.
Exactly.
Okay, so doing a bit, did you say ITV?
Yeah.
Where else were you freelancing and what made it so difficult?
I did news reading for the Breeze FM in Hampshire. I once slept overnight in a radio studio to make a whole load of shifts that I booked three back-to-back work. And that was, I really do not advise doing that. So I'd finished it This Morning in Waterloo. Okay. That's where they used to be. I then got an overnight train to Basingstoke from Waterloo. Wow. I had nowhere to stay, so I slept in the studio, which I really, really, you should never do that. But I had to get there for 5 o'clock the next morning to read the breakfast news. So I thought, okay, that's how I'm going to have to make that work. Finished that shift and then I went to BBC Radio London to do the phones after that. I mean, I didn't manage it well at all because I had that fear, which I learned how to kind of rest with, of if I say no, they're going to ask someone else. And I just want to be the girl that says yes. So that I struggled with, realised this is not sustainable. You need to find yourself a full-time job. My friends, my family were absolutely livid when they found out I'd taken a sleeping bag with me on my shift. That went badly. And so I thought, I've got to find a full-time job. So I looked for one, which was, I got a producing role on Sky News' programme Sunrise. I thought, oh, I can kind of breathe a sigh of relief. I'm going to have a regular salary. I don't need to panic. I can take holiday. But I thought, I don't really, really, really want to be a producer. And so I got another job. I applied for a reporter job. There's sort of a story behind this at Premier Christian Radio, because I knew they potentially had another job offer. And I ended up with two very different job offers and a very short amount of time to make a decision, which was pretty stressful.
Yes, which is also very interesting for us to delve into and how you did this. So actually, the Premier Christian Radio job you went for, you were aware there was another gig going, and actually you kind of put yourself forward at that stage in that interview for the other job.
I knew I wanted to be a presenter. My best piece of advice is be a journalist about the type of job you want. So I discovered through someone sitting next to someone at a dinner party, and then I found out that Premier Christian Radio, this very niche broadcaster, but a national broadcaster, needed a breakfast presenter and they needed a female. Well, they weren't advertising for that job, but they were advertising for a reporter role. So I thought, right, I'm just going to go for the reporter job. And then when I got the interview, I just told them how I thought I'd be a great breakfast presenter, which is really, in so many circumstances, you shouldn't do. Because, you know, if you turned up somewhere and you said, oh, I just want to kind of be on TV or I want to be on the radio, you're going to be laughed out of the room. Lo and behold, I got a phone call that said, we'd love to offer you the reporter job, but have you thought about presenting our breakfast show? Thought, how did this absolutely mad plan work? How did you know? And so I said, well, that's when I had to decide, oh my goodness, I can go for this quite niche broadcaster. And is that going to pigeonhole me working for a kind of faith-based station, but it's behind the microphone and it's at breakfast and it's speech based? That's all the skills I want to learn. But am I going to be pigeonholed if I take that, or do I go to Sky News? And in the end, I thought, I want to be a presenter. I can get those skills now. I probably should take that, because later on, if I want to sort of work my way back into Sky News, that's probably not impossible. But this radio program exists now and they'll find someone. And I don't know when that opportunity will come. So I took the radio job.
And what was it like? So you were there, double-headed breakfast show. I think there are fewer double-headed breakfast shows around anyway than there used to be. It was not uncommon for a younger woman to be paired up with an older man. And that was exactly the scenario you found yourself in. So, yeah, how did you find co-presenting? How did you build that relationship? Because it is really crucial, isn't it?
I had quite an intimidating prospect, because my co-presenter was utterly wonderful, a man called John Pantry. He'd been there since the station launched and had done breakfast the entire time. He was much loved.
And were they just waking up to him before you arrived?
No, so he had several other people who went on that journey.
That's
with
a relief,
because
yes, that could have been quite difficult.
That would have been. So I thought, look, first of all, I was quite young, so I had thousands of ideas, which I think was really annoying to my station editor, because, you know, you're brand new in your job. It's like, I want to do all these 10,000 things, which included at one crazy point requesting there to be a llama in the studio for a nativity vision I had, which was a bit bonkers. Yeah,
if you can't request that at Premier Christian Radio, I'm not sure what other opportunities you're going to have.
But I just thought, I've got to go softly, softly, because the thing that's going to make this job work for me is if my co-presenter likes me, and yeah, therefore that's what the audience will like. So I've got to go slowly. My main priority is that relationship. Mm-hmm. But also, I was working with someone who was just about to turn 70. I don't have many friends in their 70s. So it was a different type of relationship to build. And also, I wanted him to be on board with my crazy ideas. So building trust, building friendship worked for me, and then slowly and steadily I was then able to kind of insert the slightly more mad ideas I had. It was about just taking time to really learn from him, and I did need to learn. I'd never presented a breakfast show before. I couldn't believe that I was sat there, and I was really keen to do more news than they'd done, because I'd come from LBC and I thought, right, let's have engaging debates. And we had phone-ins. They were just very different to phone-ins you'd hear elsewhere. We still did journalism. It was just different. So I was trying to sort of inject more news and more topicality into a programme that had been there for years and was quite a safe space. So gradually, and when things work, people are happy to say, okay, we'll try that. I mean, we did a debate series called Taboo or To Do, and we took topics that for Christians would be quite controversial. Well, I kind of learned how to create an engaging debate. I'm just going to translate those skills, but for a very different, more niche audience.
And talking about that injection of news that you wanted to bring into it, you did get the chance to do that. And actually, this is a really good lesson in making the most of whatever platform you're on, something you mentioned earlier, regardless of the size of the station, regardless of whether you're paid or unpaid, but actually a lesson in creating an opportunity and turning it into something bigger.
You can do. And I thought, there's no reason we can't have the same journalistic clout as anyone else. And also, to speak really honestly, I was quite keen to kind of make a name for the station and for myself, so that I wasn't going to be stuck in a kind of religious broadcasting realm that I couldn't get out of. So we did an interview with Tim Farron, and quite a lot of the topics that are coming up right now with the leadership debate for the SNP were very present when Tim Farron was running for the general election. And he came in and did an interview with us, and I thought, I think I know that there's a line out of this that's going to be newsworthy. We did an interview with Tim Farron and we filmed it, and it made the BBC 10 o'clock news that night. And if you can do that there, when you don't have a sort of an army of journalists and a resource, you've basically just got an idea and a persuasive producer who is on hand to help, and you can secure the interview, you do all the things you do elsewhere, get cameras in the studio, have that introduction, and then write it up when it's done, send it out to PA, let people know that you've got that exclusive. That's exactly what we did. It's the same system that works everywhere. If you've got opportunity behind a microphone with airwaves and you can make that story, other people are going to want it.
An exclusive is good. Can be a bit underrated. So from here, you got yourself a good showreel, which helped you with your next opportunity.
Yes, so I'd met a few people at Radio 4 and their religion team working at Premier Christian Radio. So I got some freelancing with them and I thought, okay, this is time to move on to the next step.
Was there some crossover then between people who worked on Premier Christian Radio and Radio 4?
There wasn't. It was more that when I went to events and took the show out on outside broadcast, I met some of the Radio 4 team, and so built relationships with them. And I thought, okay, actually, it's time. I did a show on BBC Radio Cambridgeshire doing their Sunday morning faith and ethics-based programme, but I still thought, oh, I'm in this niche and I don't know how to get out of it. What do I do? And then I found out then through another relationship that Euronews were looking for some correspondents, and they were based in France. And I thought, well, kind of, I'm not going to move to France. That sounds very scary and not for me. And I've just started establishing myself at Radio 4, so why would I move? And I said, look, I'll come, but it's only on a freelance basis. And I flew out to France, did a screen test, and they said, okay, we'll offer you a correspondent job Monday to Thursday. And then on a Friday, you can present our breakfast programme, which was Good Morning Europe, a kind of live international rolling news programme. And I thought, I'll do that. That would seem silly to say no to. And it felt to me, finally, that that was a step into the mainstream. And they didn't mind that my showreel previously was based on a much more niche place, because I'd been on air when Donald Trump was elected president, when David Cameron resigned, and all those skills I'd learnt there then lent to what I was going to do.
But did it matter that that was radio and this was telly?
I don't think people mind. The problem I had then as a correspondent for the TV is I used to have a really big screen up behind me, and I was a disinformation reporter, so we'd be kind of debunking stories that broke online and doing live reports into breakfast. And I was describing everything. And my editor said, no, we can see that. Stop describing. I was like, oh, yes. Oh, my goodness.
From there, you were enticed back to the UK to join GB News. You knew some of the team who were setting it up, didn't you?
Again, it came down to those relationships that I'd built. So I realised GB News was launching. One of the people who'd launched Good Morning Europe in the form that I presented it at was involved. So I thought, OK, let's give this a shot. Also, on a kind of, you do have a personal life outside of your professional life. And 2 years in France and a pandemic, I thought, my goodness, if Boris and Macron had gone on a bit better and it would be easier for me to fly home to see my family, maybe I wouldn't have been so tempted to come back. But it was time to come back to London. So the launch of GB News really facilitated that, working in a what was at the beginning, as I'm sure you're all aware, very turbulent startup environment, which required really long hours, relentless enthusiasm, lots of negative press, and just having to say, you know, I'm going to stick at this.
And how did you square that in your own mind?
The working hard and working long hours to me was that I was going to just make the very best job of it I could. We hadn't launched a TV station for 30 years. And I was really behind this idea of just talking to ordinary people rather than kind of always having the big figureheads. We launched bulletins actually after about 6 months of me being there. And I took quite a big bit of a steer on that to kind of plant myself also with the impartial part of their news broadcasting, because you have to think, whatever job you're doing, I'm never going to give my opinion on anything. I'm not here for my opinion, I'm here for my analysis.
So that's something you had decided, actually, the sort of broadcaster you wanted to be, or journalist, was that was the tone, that was the
absolutely
approach that was you?
Because you're also kind of protecting what job you want to do next. And I'm not really anyone of any importance. I'm not a decision maker. I'm not changing policy. So why does it really matter what I think? I'm much more interested in speaking to the people who've actually got some clout. So it made sense to me that I knew I never really want to give my opinion on anything. I mean, I might tell you what my favorite color is and how many sisters I have. And I'll let you know a little bit about my personal life. But what I actually think about really meaty topics doesn't seem relevant. And that isn't what I wanted to do. So I spent my time at GB News working as a correspondent or co-presenting the breakfast programme, which was impartial, and then doing the bulletins, which of course have to be impartial. And it's quite interesting, GB News's model, because they've got the bulletins, that means they can have the opinion pieces as well, because they need balance overall. So I just stuck myself firmly to the impartial side of the broadcasting, but thought, actually, what I really want is my own show. So I looked quite hard for one for the last 6 months of working at GB News.
And you mentioned that this job was advertised. This was the first one you had to go through this application process to get. So talk to us about that. What was required? Because presenting is a funny business. There aren't always application processes. What did you have to do for this one?
So I think probably for the last 9 months, I'd sent many emails, like we all have done, to people that you think are important, who are decision makers, who might be able to give you a job, basically saying, as brazen as it is, hello, I'm potentially looking for a job, I'm available and I'm around.
And this is editors at stations, is it? Is that who you would pick out?
Yes, I mean, what I've always had for my whole career is a list of all the television or radio programmes that I love, and then worked out who are the people producing them, editing them, and thinking, right, how can I gently get in touch with all of these people? So I'd sort of had a few feelers about, but I couldn't believe it when I saw, oh my gosh, Times Radio actually hiring for this person. There's an advert and I can read exactly what they want. So I had some very gentle introductions that I'd already kind of engineered just with Times Radio in general, because I thought that kind of fits with the type of broadcaster I am. So long term, I should probably try and establish some relationships there. But I went through the interview process like everyone else who would have applied for it. So there was an online application. I had to submit a showreel. And then, of course, like with everything, you want to tweak the showreel in the most Times mm-hmm. radio version. But even then, I was messaging people at the station to say, hi there, I've seen this job application. This is the type of thing I'm looking after. Just look out for my application. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's brazen or, I don't know, bending the rules, but I just thought I'm going to tell as many people there that I want that job, basically. And then I had an interview, which was great. It was slightly weird for me because we did it half in person, half on Zoom. And then I was asked back to do a demo at a very, very difficult time because the demo I did was the morning after the Queen had died. Basically, the task that I was set was to, for half an hour, present and produce and set up what I would have done as though that morning was the early breakfast show. That was it. Then an anxious wait.
Yes.
And I decided, I think, that if I got that job, I was definitely going to take it. And then I got a phone call and I thought, oh my gosh, yes, I'll start as soon as I can.
You weren't tempted to say, and actually, I really like breakfast. I'm sick of 3:30 alarms. Exactly. Can we just make it 4:30?
Yes, I think there wasn't a gig going on.
We often see someone's success, but don't have a clue about the effort, the focus, the planning of what goes on to progress from training, work experience, first paid work, freelancing, local to network, co-hosting to having your own show. So huge thank you to Rosie for sharing her experience. The full conversation is available on the Radio Academy website and it's exclusive to Radio Academy members. And of course, you can become a Radio Academy member if you would like to. All the details on the website. Until the next time.